Hello, sacred beings. Welcome to Sacred Sister Podcast. Join us as we normalize the magic and sacralize the mundane.
Expanding consciousness and deepening awareness to support you in leading a life full of healing, meaning, and magic.
I'm your host, Britt Lynn, energetic cartographer and personal transformation coach.
I'm your host, Tana Lina, a certified astrologer, rebirth coach, and sorceress.
If you're brand new here, welcome, beloved. We are so grateful, so happy to have you here. If you're a seasoned sacred being, welcome back. Thank you so much for your support, for your listenership, and we look forward to seeing you in the show.
Let's dive in.
Hello, sacred beings, and welcome to another episode of Sacred Sister Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, and especially if it's your first time here, welcome and hello. We are so excited to have you today, and especially so excited to be offering this second part in a death series, what we're calling a death series here on Sacred Sister Podcast. We feel like it is such a massive topic that A, we don't see talked about a lot. B, we feel is very deserving of multiple episodes. So at this time, it's a four-parter. We're on the second episode of four parts. Who knows, more may be brought through. But we are so honored to be sitting here today with Miss Emily Bingham. Emily is a widow, a grief coach, and the founder of Move Through. In Move Through, Emily is empowering grievers to move, grow, and thrive through loss.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I have to say, thank you so much for joining us, Emily. Wow, it is such a privilege to have you on such a sensitive topic. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you. It's an honor to be here with you guys.
You know, I learned about you through Shoshana Raven, who is a mutual mentor of ours, and Hannah just actually made a really exciting investment in Living Brave as well. And really, I would love to, before we dive into the episode and this really sensitive topic, we'd love to turn the mic over to you and really invite you to share some of your medicine with our audience and community and just ground us down for this topic.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. So yes, Move Through, as you described it, is my mission, is how I am attempting to support and empower grievers to move, grow, and thrive through life after loss. And so what that really looks like is meeting the griever where they are at. I think in the early stages of a loss, it's really hard to see meaning, to connect it to something greater than you, to make sense of the whole loss. So really the entryway into my work is helping grievers cope with their emotions and connecting them to others who understand. So that community component is so, so essential. Now, the ways that I teach them how to cope is largely through movement, by getting out of your head and into your body and like actually embodying an emotion and then releasing it. And then teaching them mindset work on ways to potentially reframe not just their loss, but even individual emotions such as sadness and anger, and how all of these emotions are so valid and they all deserve reverence. So that's kind of the beginning foundation of my work. And then once we get into grow, I'm entering into subjects like post-traumatic growth. Like, how do you find meaning after a loss? How do you rediscover who you are? With the ego death of the roles that we had as wife, as mother, you know, that are largely defined by other people. And when they die with us. Our identity dies with us. So we dive into identity work and finding one's purpose. And then my newest program, which I'm so excited about, is Thrive Through Grief. And that's really where I'm teaching anyone who's faced adversity. It could be a loss. It could be something else. It could be addiction. It could be rape. It could be just anything hard that someone has had to go through, and how they are taking their pain and turning it into purpose. So helping them create their own communities and start their own movements, around something hard that has happened to them. And we're doing this all in the online space, which is so wild to just be connected to so many people from all over the world. So yeah, that's Move Through in a nutshell.
Wow. So beautiful, such a beautiful work that you're doing. And I just want to like honor you for really stepping into this space and sharing your medicine this way. We see that you have Chiron in the eighth house in your natal chart, which is Chiron is the wounded healer. Eighth house is the house of death. It's in Gemini. Like you're literally being the messenger about death and grief and trauma. And this is part with Mercury conjunct to Midheaven, this is part of your career. So share with me a little bit, or share with us, with all of us, a little bit about how you've come to move through grief. What was the traumatic experience that happened in your life? And how did you end up turning that around into creating your business?
Absolutely. So my husband passed away from cancer. It was uveal melanoma, which is a rare eye cancer that's often only found in older populations, but Ian happened to be 32. He was actually 23 when he was originally diagnosed. And we thought, well, eye tumor, it'll be fine. We'll get it out and we'll just go on with our lives. And that's kind of what we did. We decided to get married. We started a family and we felt that this whole cancer diagnosis was just kind of far behind us. And then in August of 2017, just after we got the news that I was pregnant with our second, we found out that Ian's cancer had metastasized. And so this diagnosis is pretty fatal. We did keep the hope, and I think largely because we were in denial of the fact that he could actually die from this, and fought for 15 months, and then he passed away in March 2019. And that's really where, my grief journey began earlier when his cancer metastasized with the anticipatory grief, but in the aftermath of his death is really where I had to, it was kind of like the breaking moment, right? Like your entire world kind of falls apart and you're kind of faced with the choice to rebuild back to normal or to rebuild something stronger. And for me, I read a lot of different widow memoirs, Option B by Sheryl Sandberg, Norm McInerney's No Happy Endings. I also read Dr. Edith Eger's The Choice. She's an Auschwitz survivor. And the common theme was, you know, struggle is universal, but, you know, victimhood is kind of a choice. And it just spoke the themes of resilience and kind of turning pain into purpose really, really spoke to me early on. So I kind of leaned on those themes. And I also found that exercise was a really supportive way for me to move through my emotions. When I was angry, which came up a lot for me my first year of grief, I would go to a HIIT workout and just like lift heavy weights or do burpees, just moving all that energy through me, maybe throwing some punches. I experienced a lot of anxiety and overwhelm, just having to assume the roles that my husband had and also parent to small children who were 1 and 3 years old alone. And so I would try to, you know, move through that anxiety with either a run just to kind of move that energy through my body or going to yoga to ground down. But for me, my grief was just expressed in such a physical way where talking about it only was like half of the equation and I needed something else. So, at around the 6 month mark after my husband died, I was kind of at a crossroads. Like, what am I supposed to do with my life? Like I had been a stay at home mom when my husband was alive and I had worked in marketing and non-for-profits, you know, beforehand, but to sustain an actual career and support a family, I felt like I don't want to be working a 9 to 5 and making, you know, not that great of money. So I kind of took a risk and I I hired my first mentor, Jackie Carr. She's amazing. And in a matter of three sessions, we kind of put together this, the foundations for Move Through. Another piece that I didn't really touch on was that I started sharing my story of loss really early on. Ian and I had started a GoFundMe to pay for some of his cancer bills. And in those posts, I would always like search for like the lesson. I'd be like, okay, there's gotta be something here that I can like tell people that's good, or that, you know, it's like Ian and I are at another round of treatment, but we're enjoying time together, like playing cribbage in the lobby. You know, I always tried to find some of the light in the darkness. And I think that really did serve me in terms of coping with the grief and with the loss. But after he passed away, friends and family asked if I would continue to write. And so I decided to start a blog. And then the blog kind of bled out into social media, and people started following my journey really closely, and they started reaching out and telling me how much my story was supporting them. And that was kind of how I started to see how I could turn my pain into purpose, because my story was helping other people in similar situations. And even if they weren't navigating a loss, they would tell me that they took their life, you know, a little bit less for granted, or they hugged their loved one a little bit closer that night. And to me, I was the fact that I could make an impact with my words and my story and everything that I've been going through really inspired me to hire this coach and to create something with my pain and my loss.
Mm. What a big, beautiful story. What a big, beautiful life. I wonder, what you touched on in so many different words was this sentiment that I simultaneously felt when I had lost my mom to bone marrow cancer and blood cancer, and her body wasn't able to intake the stem cell transplant, and then losing my dad 20 months and 2 days later. Like, would you say that it's like death is such a beautiful markation for us as humans of just how fragile human life actually is,
yeah,
and our spirit embodied in this specific vessel, how precious that is. And for me, one of the biggest pieces that came to the forefront, screaming, running with a fervor, was just like, tomorrow's not promised. Yeah. You don't know what tomorrow entails. What are you going to do with the life that you do have, the days that you do have left, the breaths that you have, the heartbeats that you have inside of yourself? For me, it like helped me become so much more brave and courageous, and just like, what do you have to lose? Like, what do you have to lose? These are wild things. Like, who would think of starting a business from the greatest tragedy that you've ever experienced, you know? But I love what you're saying. And I've experienced it so much myself that it's like sharing the golden nuggets and the wisdom and the hardships. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the hardships, and normalizing it to people too. Like, we're in such a state of so many people being traumatized in so many different ways and not knowing what the fuck to do with all, yeah, of it.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I thought it was, I mean, yes, I was trying to find the lesson and the good, and at the same time, just being super raw and honest about what I was going through and the hardship I was experiencing. It became this like beautiful, mutually beneficial relationship between me and anyone who was following me on social media, because this was like my online diary where I could have my grief witnessed. And in return, they felt seen by my words, mm-hmm, as well, and found safety and comfort in that. So I think it's just this idea of like me first, like whoever's going to put themselves out there first. It's so scary to do so. But like you said, what do you have to lose? My life was already, and I'm scattered into a million pieces. So, you know, I thought, well, if this fails, like, I'll figure it out. I'll walk myself through it, because look at what I'm already walking myself through today. So yeah, I totally feel that.
I love how you just mentioned that blog, that diary helped you to be witnessed in your grief.
Yeah.
And I feel that that is such an important part in the grieving process, to have support, if that's within family or friends or community or therapist, someone that witness oneself in the grieving process.
Yeah.
I remember, and this is a whole, maybe not as, or definitely not as big traumatic as the one that you went through. And, but I do want to mention it because a lot of people do have very close relationships to their animals. Mm-hmm. And I had one of those very deep relationships with my bird. He was with me for 12 years. Mm-hmm. He was this little parakeet and he was talking, and I had him for my whole school year. He was basically with me throughout, like starting third class until like third grade until the end of my university bachelor's degree. And when he crossed over, I was devastated, and nobody was able to witness me in my grief, mm-hmm. because it wasn't a human who has crossed over, and it was just an animal, quote unquote.
Right.
But nobody understood the relationship I had with his spirit. And it was really wild to be in that state of grief. And everybody around me was just like, what's the big deal? You know, almost like, just get a new bird, or, you know. And the only one that was kind of understanding was my mom. And she could feel more into it. And my best friend, they were a little bit into like witnessing it, but not to the extent of what I actually needed. I really needed to hold myself through it by myself in a lot of ways. So I'm mentioning this because I do see this in other people as well. When their dog dies or their cat dies, it's almost like we can't really fully be witnessed in that grief, because it's not, it's supposed to be not as bad as if a human dies.
We almost, what happens, I think, is that we qualify people's experience of loss, and we try to make comparisons like, oh, the loss of a child is so much worse than the loss of a grandparent or whatever. And I think instead of comparison, it's like acknowledging, yes, each of these losses are different, but your pain is always the worst pain. Mm-hmm. There is no hierarchy of suffering, right? Like, if it's yours, it's real and it's true. And it doesn't minimize the fact that the loss over your, you know, it, my husband's death, my experience of my husband's death does not minimize your loss mm-hmm. of your bird. Right. And so how can we hold space and be witness to all of these experiences without comparing? Because what I often see with clients is they get into the comparison game, and it just builds up these walls of victimhood even more mm-hmm. because they keep saying how much worse their loss is mm-hmm. when in fact, all loss is bad. Your loss will always feel the worst because it's your pain, right? But the more that we can understand that suffering is universal, pain is pain, then we can also say, oh, they're moving through this too, and so can I, right? Mm-hmm. And I love what you said about grief being witnessed. I did my grief educator training with David Kessler, who's like the grief expert. And he says, he has a quote somewhere where he says, grief is as unique as your fingerprint, right? Like everyone's grief is so different. So the ways that we are going to move through grief are going to look really different. Mm-hmm. But the one universal need is for grief to be witnessed. And it's so true. And what is so unfortunate is that our society does not know how to be of witness. Mm-hmm. We like to fix, we like to solve. We don't know how to sit with people in their pain. So mm-hmm. what happens is you might lean on friends or family to support you as you're grieving, but they say things, you know, like, well, at least you can have another baby, right? In the case of miscarriage, or at least you can get another bird. Mm-hmm. And they just try to get you back into this place of happiness.
Totally.
When what a griever really needs is just to feel their feelings. You can't heal what you don't feel. And, you know, our society wants us to live in this state of perpetual merriment and joy and happiness and sunshine and rainbows, which is wonderful. And we're completely ignoring the opposite end of the spectrum, which is just as valid. And I would argue amplifies this other side.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I feel like even in spiritual spaces, I mean, I feel like this is where so much strength and empowerment does come in the grief process. I know for myself, it's been highly awakening, but witnessing all those perceptions are like kind of like coping mechanisms. Like they come from a very loving place, of course,
totally.
But it also completely bypasses the very human nature that we have, that we're experiencing. And there's nothing more like kind of dehumanizing than being really raw and open and vulnerable with someone about the like excruciating pain that you're going through and being attempted to be placated by like some little phrase or something. It's like, right. And for me, those have been some of the most frustrating moments. And they also feel just so wildly unsafe. It's like, okay, I know where I can't go now for comfort to be held.
Exactly. And it can just add to a grieving person's suffering so much when they're already going through something really hard. But I like what you said about, you know, it is coming from a good place. And so remembering like, it's no one's fault for saying the wrong thing or trying, you know, acting in a way that is actually not supportive. It's just that that's why we're all here having this conversation, is to educate and to normalize grief and death and struggle and hardship, right? So that we can learn to support one another better.
Mm-hmm. And wouldn't you say like, when my dad passed, especially, it was like, not only had I just lost my mom and learned how to stand up from it, and then my dad got in a motorcycle accident, super unexpected. And then it wasn't only losing my mom and my dad, but both my parents. Yes. Was like a third loss. And I was just super raw and open after that. And I really sat with and created some pieces of content that are some of my most circulated. That's like 7 ways to sit with your grieving friend. It's like, it's almost equally a opportunity for your friends and loved ones to step into a space of deep discomfort within themselves, to really like illuminate themselves to like, yeah, how many of these proclivities do I have toward like just making them happy or helping them feel better in the moment? And it's like, how much can you actually sit with them? Even if it's in silence, know that there's nothing that you can do to make this better.
Right.
Asking, sometimes it's like the most meaningful moment when someone even just asks me like, if I want to share a special memory of that person, like while I'm crying with them, that, you know, like brings them more deeply into the space with me than wanting to pull me out to be in the normal place, the human, you know, fine, everything's going to be okay with them.
I love how you say that, because I think after you lose someone you love, there's this horrible sensation when you realize that your world has stopped, yet the rest of the world keeps going. And you just want to hold on to that life that was the life you knew that was so familiar and comfortable. And yet here you are. And everything is foreign and new from the moment you wake up and my husband isn't there, right? To the time that I go to bed at night and he's not there again, right? Like there's so many invisible secondary losses that, you know, just nobody would notice unless you're the person grieving them. And so, yes, I totally understand. Like it just feels, your person dies and like the bereavement period is what, like 2 weeks typically to get back to work or something. It's like we have the demands of life to get back to, and you just want to be in your grief, and there's a lot of tension there. So I totally see that. And having someone who can
I the holidays are coming up, and I made a similar post about how to support someone in the holidays. And it's like, ask them about their person, because it's so comforting to know that somebody else is thinking about them too, that you're not alone in that, that you're not the only one who's holding on to this past without them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's such a scary topic for so many of us, death and grief. I witnessed it with my husband when his mom crossed over, and we were all around her hospital bed, really hoping that this medication is going to work. And turns out that they actually gave her the wrong medication. So it was a mistake from the hospital that she ultimately died, which is a whole nother story about the medical system that we're living in. But it was also like almost the last thing that she said to us was, I want to have a new body. And so she was ready, and she was ready to transition. But when she was in a hospital bed, it was so fascinating because we were all standing around it, the whole family, and it was years ago, like it's going to be 7 years. And suddenly I feel, and she was unconscious, and we were just kind of like hoping this medication would wake her up. And suddenly I feel this wind on my right ear, and her voice says, take care of my Ali. And Alex is my husband's name, and she always called him Ali. And I would say to her, yes, I will, forever. And then I would just feel this wind, and she would leave. And then after that, it would be doot, 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 doot in the hospital. So after that, her body died. Wow. And it was so hard on my husband. Like, they were so close. I think this is also why she came to me and said, take care of my Ali, because she knew. And my husband told me that before, if I haven't been there, he would have probably killed himself. Like, he would have probably done, like, really dove into some sort of drugs, addiction, escapism, some sort of thing to just try to cope with that.
Right.
And I was kind of that steady rock there for him throughout the time. But it was really hard for him to move through the grief. And even after 7 years, there is still so much that he hasn't allowed himself to fully process. Yeah. So I wonder, what do you say to people that are coming to you that are saying, I'm having such a hard time to move through grief?
Yeah.
And they're still kind of stuck in that denial, anger, or just kind of like pushing it away and not wanting to feel it.
Right. Totally. Well, first of all, I normalize it for them. I normalize and validate their emotions and try to educate them on why it's okay to be feeling those feelings. I also try to help them recognize that they've been taught at a very young age to disconnect from their emotions, that their emotions are wrong, and that this isn't their fault. It's just that this is the way that we've been raised. And so we almost have to train our brains, you know, to when we're experiencing an emotion, say anxiety, and our brain automatically goes, what's wrong with me? Or if we're crying and we're all of a sudden like trying to suppress and go away, trying to understand like where that subconscious patterning is coming from, so that we can catch ourselves in the act and instead say, I am anxious. I own my anxiety. I'm sad. I'm going to own my sadness. Because it's not until you actually own the emotion or the way that you're feeling that you can do something with it, that you can feel it. Otherwise, our defenses and our inhibitory emotions are just built so high. And the inhibitory emotions are anxiety, shame, and guilt. So this is when you're having an emotion over having an emotion, right? You're feeling ashamed because you just blew up at your kids because you're the only one
there because your husband died, right? So I'm not allowed to feel my anger because I'm ashamed of it. But the anger is the core emotion, and I need to allow myself to feel it, to release it from my body. So a lot of my work is about education, and helping us just catch ourselves in the act so that we give ourselves permission to feel whatever we need to feel, and then giving them coping tools, because it can feel really scary. You know, becoming dysregulated is a real thing. And especially if you had a traumatic loss, I'm starting my trauma certification for that reason, because people can, you know, when they go deep into their emotions or they revisit the loss, it can be re-traumatizing for them. Their body doesn't know that they're not reliving the loss right there. So giving them coping mechanisms so that they don't feel like they're drowning in their emotions, so that they feel like they're actually empowered. And what those coping tools can look like are breathwork exercises, grounding exercises, you know, simple things like I have this like stone that has a shaka on it that reminds me of Ian, like having that in my pocket where I can, you know, just hold on to it and ground down and come back into the moment, know that I'm safe and supported. I'm not in the experience of loss again. Obviously I do a lot with physical movement. So just exercises, to embody that emotion. But, from the work that I've done with my clients, that education is really important. And it's just kind of, that's what really helps them kind of lean into the pain as opposed to running away from it.
All of this is such valuable information. I'm just so grateful to have you on and having this conversation right now.
Thanks.
There's two directions that I'm feeling just so pulled toward going. And I'll start with this one because I feel like it correlates to this conversation or what you just mentioned so much. I feel like, and I'm curious to know whether this is really what sparked your whole workout kind of embodiment processing and moving the energy piece. It's so potent for me to even contemplate what I might be almost kind of doing to myself, like in terms of health, like stagnancy, the suppressed emotion in my tissues and what that could metastasize into. I know that I feel so fortunate to have witnessed this process, which ultimately led to my mom's passing, because in 2012, my grandfather passed away in a really traumatic way in our backyard in a fire. And both of my parents witnessed it, and it was super traumatic for them. And neither of them went through counseling or anything like that. Shortly after, synchronistically, my mom's primary care doctor, whose practice later got shut down for malpractice, he suggested for her menopause and to move through menopause more easily that he put her on antidepressants because it would help with the hot flashes. And it was directly after my grandpa passed away. So she was like, oh, maybe that would be good to kind of serve a dual purpose. And I'm not demonizing pharmaceuticals, but I do think it's important to have some kind of like plan with like, how long are you going to be taking these antidepressants, or is it kind of an endless future? She got on the antidepressants. They didn't work for menopause for very long. Her body had already become addicted, and she started to feel like she wouldn't be able to do it. She wouldn't be able to live without the antidepressants because she feared the grief so much. And it was shortly after that, like 8 months after my grandpa passed away, that her health started declining so quickly. That's when they found the blood cancer. That's when they found the bone marrow cancer. Her doctor told her she had 10 years to live. Wow, what a surprise. She lived to 9 years. It's like, so I love that I've been able to witness that timeline, because it's helped me see just how much not moving the energy can do to you. Yeah. Was that a big piece of your inspiration also? Was it anywhere in your head?
Well, so it's just like, I found exercise so intuitively. I used to be a ballerina. I used to be a fitness instructor. So for me, it was like a natural progression for me to just want to escape into a yoga studio or something where I was moving through it in a very physical way. Mm-hmm. But when I started to dive into the business and actually do the research, you know, reading books like The Body Keeps the Score and learning that emotional memory and trauma are not just stored in our brains, they are stored in our bodies. It was like, ding, this all makes sense. And then, you know, opened the doors to somatic experiencing and work by Dr. Peter Levine and just educating myself on that. And I am far behind, and you know, these people, like, there's a whole body of work, but yes, like, to me, it seems like it's the missing piece from talk therapy, and you need both. Sometimes there's just no words. Sometimes you just need to feel it. But I absolutely, I'm so sorry for your mom and how, and I think especially at that time, like, therapy is taboo. It's like, oh, you only go there if you have problems, right? Or talking about death and struggle was even more taboo than it is now. So I see that a lot, that your grief that gets stuck in the body manifests into physical ailments, pain, long-term depression and mental disorders as well. So yes, absolutely.
So important. So important. I feel like even that alone, that awareness and knowing that, like, oh yeah, there is a whole body of work behind this. And it's not just some woo spiritual person like, oh, spirit, oh, energy manifests in your tissues, blah, blah, blah. I'm so grateful that you've stepped into this work and you've really educated yourself about it too. I feel like so much of my awareness is experiential. I'm not educated on this, but I feel that I know it on such a deep level.
Right.
But yeah, that's just so beautiful. Hannah, I wanted to see if you had anything to comment on that.
Mm-hmm.
I know I've been talking a lot.
No, I love it. I love where it's going. And I absolutely agree. And it just made me think about also my husband and him holding in a lot of the grief. And he has certain swellings in his body, and especially around the throat chakra. And I just know that this is part of it, like needing it to process, needing to speak about it, and speaking about her. And I am, I would say probably 90% of the time, I am the one who brings her up, who brings up her name within the family unit even. And I always invite her in, like when we all come together, I mention her on purpose to help everyone. I kind of tune into, hey, her spirit is here. And let's not ignore the pink elephant in the room. Like, let's talk about her. It's such an interesting piece for me because I feel that it's not just my husband. It's literally the whole family that hasn't really fully grieved her. And I am doing my best to, first of all, really hold them where they at and allow them to move through the grief in however long they want to. And at the same time, I feel that I want to help them to bring her up more and to like move forward, you know, and not be stuck in this place of, yes, this happened and it's very traumatic. Let's not talk about it because then I'm going to be in the pain. And so recently on her birthday, I had a celebration of life and I said, let's bring the family together and let's just celebrate her life on her birthday as if it's her birthday, you know? And we would all come together and we would get all the photos together and we would look at photos together and talk and share stories about her. And this is kind of what I'm trying to support them in the grief. And so I'm asking, is there anything when you find yourself in a moment where, yes, we want to for sure honor the journey that people are moving through in their grief, and how can we support them in growing through the grief?
Right. So I was, what you're doing, which is beautiful, by the way, is you're helping them try to connect through their deceased loved one, to connect with their deceased loved one with more love than pain, right? You're finding ways to honor and to remember and to maintain that connection are all ways that we connect through the love. Yet when we lose someone, all we feel often in the early months, years after the loss is the pain. But truly, grief is love. Grief is the unexpressed.
Hi, this is your host, Hannah, and I'm just jumping in here real quick, and I want to ask you a question. So you've probably heard a lot about masculine and feminine energies, right? But do you know what it means to truly be in your masculine and to be in your feminine? And how does taking leadership over your energies serve yourself, your relationships, and your business? If you're interested in diving deeper into this, join my free mastermind, Energy Sovereignty. This is a deep dive into masculine and feminine energetics based on the binary code of life. And this mastermind is mind-blowing and heart-opening. So many codes that I've downloaded in there, I've never shared anywhere else. And it will leave you with deeper revelations and understandings of your life. This mastermind is packed with value and transformation, and this will be a paid offer in the future. But for now, it is still free. So make sure you sign up by going to the link in my Instagram at Hannalina Christensen. I'm super excited for you to dive in, and I'll see you there.
Loved for our person. And so if you can help anyone who's experienced a loss understand that the love is buried beneath the pain, and feeling your emotions and going into them, moving through them, is a way of excavating the pain to get to the love. And that's because I don't want to get rid of grief. I don't want to, it's not like, oh, I'm going to teach you how to feel your emotions so you can just release all your grief. It's like, no, we're teaching you this so that you can embrace grief, because your grief is forever. Grief is love. And it's just that, again, it's an education piece, right? Like, we think that we need to push it away because it's a painful emotion. I mean, I'm learning right now about the pain and the pleasure balance and how we are so addicted to dopamine and so afraid of pain.
Yeah,
it's correlated within our bodies, right? Like, we return to homeostasis after allowing ourselves to feel some pain, and then we come back and can feel that pleasure from that. So I kind of look at it the same way. It's like, I need to go into the depths of my pain to expand into all of the joy and abundance in my life as well. It's all connected. Mm-hmm. Yet we're just afraid to go there. And so helping them see that it really is love. And I talk a lot about duality in my work. So, using strategies to connect with your person through the love as you're going into the pain. You know, maybe it's starting a foundation in their honor. I have like so many of these, writing a letter to them, memorializing their Facebook page, starting a cause that they were really passionate about, like all of these things that we can connect to them through love that you can do alongside the grief and the pain. It doesn't take away the pain, but it softens it, right? It just gives it a little bit of a cushion so that it's not so hard, but so that you're doing both. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
I love how you said that grief is love.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it. I mean, I don't want my grief to ever go away. It makes me sad that I don't get to cry as often as I used to, because that sadness is just love.
Mm-hmm. And whenever I witness that in my husband, when he's moving through grief, it's like such a beautiful moment.
Yes.
It's so, like, I feel the love that he has for his mother, and it's just such a beautiful moment to witness. And also with Britt, like, it's so beautiful to witness her in her grief and seeing the love that she has for her parents. Mm-hmm. You know, and it's, I think, yes, it is uncomfortable at times. And I've definitely found myself in moments where I was trying to save her you brought out of the waters of grief and coming onto the land with me. But also I've learned a lot in the process of really, really honoring the emotions and really knowing how important it is to let those emotions flow in order to, dig deeper into the love. You know, it's like the grief is around it, and then you dig into it and you really get access to that core love that is here.
Right. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah, I feel it's funny when you were saying it's about embracing the love, not moving past the love. The grief. I feel like that is such a revelatory statement in the almost, I see the collective narratives shifting in a lot of different ways. And I think this is one of them as well, because I think that for a lot of the spiritual minded, there's almost been this addiction to getting to the other side as quickly as possible. And like, what do I need to do? What tools do I need to use to move past this? And more so it's almost been this like pendulum swinging of, oh, how do I get out of it? Fuck, I just experienced this. And it's almost like this settling here that's like, oh, actually, this is what being a human is all about. Yes. And like, what's my fixation on needing to exit something or needing to know how to make it less big or less painful? Or how do I move through it? How do I truncate it? Like, I have to say, it was like one of the most terrifying ideas for me at the beginning of this whole embrace the grief piece, because I was like, okay, if I just let myself go completely into it, I will exhaust myself of the grief. I will just let it all out in one big slew. I'll let myself not see the light of day for 2 months. And, you know, there I am at the end of 2 months, absolutely
drained.
Oh my God. Absolutely drained. Everybody terrified about my mental state and suggesting that I turn to pharmaceuticals and things. But it's like, yeah, it's hard that it's such a lifelong process. Mm-hmm. And there are times that I can get stuck in these massive waves of confusion too, that I'm just like, oh my God, wait. Are they really not coming back? Like literally even still, and my mom's almost been gone for 4 years. And it's just like, oh my God, I have a meeting with my hypnotherapist in an hour because I started turning to a hypnotherapist to just help me move through some of these pieces. It can be so big to be like, oh my God, wait, they're for real not coming back. Like for real, for real. It's like still hard to wrap my head around that.
Well, I think, you know, what's unique about losing a parent at a young age, like you or me losing a spouse at the age of 32 versus, you know, losing someone at the end of their life, like 89-year-old person, is that you have that loss of the future. You have the loss of what could be, the loss of possibility. And so any future milestone that you could have experienced with your parents or with my husband is going to elicit a form of grief because they're not there, because mm-hmm. we get so tied to our futures with our person. We get so attached to that. So, I mean, that among with many other factors, just because people are so ingrained into who we are, is why I believe grief is a lifelong journey. And mm-hmm. whenever there is love, there's going to be grief. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I love what you said too, like how I just wanted to get to the other side of it, you know, after 2 months. And we've been talking about a little bit about like defenses and like suppressing. And I do want to name that, like, it's okay to avoid and suppress from time to time, right? Like we cannot be in our pain all the time. And so it's like, don't plunder the defenses. Sometimes we just need a break, and that's okay too. So,
yeah. Oh my gosh. Yeah. I feel that so deeply. Okay. So now I'm really wanting to touch on this other piece. A couple weeks ago, and this made me reach out to you after we had already had this scheduled, A couple weeks ago, you posted something that, as I understand it, you received a little bit of blowback for. And would you like to introduce that? Because this is a bit of a longer piece.
Yes. Well, I received a couple different criticisms criticisms and judgment. And basically, people were upset that, I guess the larger argument was that I was using my husband's death to promote my clothing line, to sell merch, to make money. I was exploiting my husband's death, and they didn't like the use of the images that I used of him. They said, you don't need to use an image of him dying. And it turned into this whole thing. And so I really took the opportunity to reflect and to make sure that I was, you know, in integrity with my mission and my why and my whole motivation for sharing my story and trying to help others in the first place, right? The clothing line was an opportunity that came to me. And for me, it felt so aligned because my whole business is founded upon how to move through grief. It's movement, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and yes, I could launch a clothing line just as Emily Bingham, but the reality is that Ian passed away and I wouldn't be doing any of this if it wasn't for him dying. So this whole narrative of me exploiting my husband's death just felt like someone was completely manipulating my story, mm-hmm. which my story truly is that my husband died. You know, I moved through my grief. It turned out that helping others really helped me heal. And I started a business, a movement, a community, and a clothing line to inspire others to do the same. So it was, and in terms of, you know, posting images of my husband dying, I think it's important for people to see what that looks like, what death looks like. Mm-hmm. I dissociated. I had a trauma response when Ian died. The second he went into hospice, my body shut down and it couldn't feel a damn thing. And that was so sad in hindsight that I couldn't be present for my husband's death because I was so numb and dissociated and detached because the whole thing was just so scary. Mm-hmm. And that death hadn't been normalized and I didn't even know what to expect out of the experience. So I just couldn't feel it at all. And so I hope that with my content and posting those images, it's like, hey, pay attention. This is going to happen to all of us. This doesn't need to be feared. This is a natural passage of life. It should be just as celebrated as birth itself. And like, how can we all learn more about this sacred passage so that we can be present for it? Because that's one of my deepest regrets surrounding my husband's death.
You know, when I saw the real, and I think you have some videos of like multiple videos of sharing those moments of the descent, it triggered so much in me in the most beautiful way. And this is why I so commended you for this whole piece, because it is so fucking important now more than ever for everyone and anyone who has eyes to witness, especially with cancer being on the rise, so many different types of cancer. It's like, we need to know what this looks like because we see a lot of chemotherapy and drug commercials and the cancer people are looking pretty okay. They're looking pretty good. And every time I see those, it like is a shard of glass to my heart. And I think about my mom whenever she started her descent in the hospital and she was like, she looked at my aunt and I with these eyes so big. And she was like, why didn't anyone tell me that it was going to be like this or that it could be like this? It is one of the deepest shadows that I feel in this whole realm.
And I think that reminds me of something too, is that like for me posting those images too, it's another way of my grief being witnessed, right? Like mm-hmm. you and me both had to go to that, and Hannah, you too, with the death of your mother-in-law, had to go through this experience of watching our loved ones die alone. Like we were alone in that, and having to go through a traumatic experience like that, thinking that you're the only one who's had to see someone fade away like that. I think it's another way of putting it out there and being like, this happened to me. I had to see my husband die and witness this and, you know, pay attention. Mm-hmm. And then having other people respond again and say, I went through this too. It's like another way of just breaking down these barriers that make mm-hmm. you feel like a total victim.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I dare say most people have no idea what that kind of disintegration of cognitive function can look or feel or just be like. And I dare say that some of the people, it's like in my mind, I'm thinking, I have so much footage of my mom on the descent. And when she passed, I was so on fire to start sharing about it. And then I dove into my own grief process and I still haven't started sharing that footage. But it's like in my mind, there's such a fire inside me that's like, if sharing these videos of my mom could even just prompt one family to sit down and have a serious conversation about a child or a parent or someone who's considering these treatments and actually like look at some of the footage of what the, you know, it's like you're taking the immune system down to nothing in the case of a stem cell transplant. And that affects the body in ways that we can't even think, we can't even perceive from a conscious space. And only when I was witnessing this was I like, holy shit, this is the most intense. It's insane that medicine has come this far, especially for the people that are able to, you know, recover from it. But fuck, it's like,
it gives you an appreciation for your life in ways that you can't even comprehend until you've actually witnessed it. And I told you guys coming in here, I was sick the past 2 weeks. Whenever I feel sick, like I couldn't get off the couch. My kids were decorating the Christmas tree and I felt horrible, but I think of Ian every time. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you know what? Like, I know things are going to get better for me. And he didn't. Mm-hmm. He didn't know if the pain would go away or that if he would be nauseous the next day, or maybe the next day he would wake up and he'd be paralyzed from the waist down because that happened, or that he might not be able to walk again. Right? Like, these hard things that are so difficult to acknowledge and so ugly to acknowledge are exactly related to gratitude and to what a privilege it is to live each day. And if we fail to acknowledge them, then we fail to even recognize what a gift we have. And that's why it's all related. It's all the light and the dark and the duality. It's connected. And that's why we have to be having this conversation.
Thank you so much, both of you, for sharing, witnessing those moments of descent. And that made me think about my grandma and both of my grandmas, who I was really close with, especially one of them, who I witnessed slowly crossing over. My other grandma, she crossed over a couple months before my birth, and she was actually the first like conscious death that I've experienced. I was like, it was 2010. So I was 22 years old. And it was actually my grandma's death, and then 2 months later, my bird's death, that made me say, I'm going to go to the United States. So that was like my way of really using that transformation that I've received through the death process of my two loved ones to shift my own life. Because I wouldn't have gone. I wouldn't have moved away if they were still alive. But what I wanted to say was, when I saw her at these last moments, and we were living right next to her house, so I would come over to her all the time and just be with her and sit with her. And she had cancer, and she said that she doesn't want to do any treatment because she was 80, and she had cancer before, and she was like, she doesn't want to go through it again. And so she just took pharmaceutical pills to just help with the pain and slowly calling in the natural dying process. And to witness that it was hard to just see her slowly being less and less alive, like more and more asleep, basically. And at the same time, what I've realized is she became more and more like a child. And the communication was less and less conscious. And it was more and more like the subconscious communication that we have with babies who cannot communicate with us yet. And it's almost like, the closer we are to that portal, if we just came into this life from the portal of birth, or if we're going out about to leave this life into the portal through the portal of death, the closer we come to this point where we can't really have these conscious conversations anymore. I'm talking about natural dying process and not, accidents or any sort of death like that, spontaneous death. But it's like we're going back to being a child. We're going back to being so close to source. And right before, like a few days before she crossed over, she started saying that she sees people in her room, and she started seeing her mom in the corner. And she would talk to, when are the birds coming to take me away and fly with me? When are the fish coming to swim with me? And it was just so poetic and so beautiful. And from the conscious mind, it didn't make sense, quote unquote, but I just felt like, oh, she's so close to source, and it has its own beauty in that as well. It's like this, it's the sacredness right before we move through that portal that shows us, wow, it's literally the cycle of life. And we're coming back to kind of where we started.
I totally agree. And I wish that more people saw it like that, right? It doesn't mean we paint it as something to be feared and shunned. I mean, look at like Halloween and the messages that we have around death and dying. It's just, and how taboo it is. So I totally agree. Mm-hmm. Love it.
Yeah, I have to say, it's like probably, I think I understand what you mean about the, especially since it was your grandmother and stuff, and she was older, whenever you were saying that she was trying to talk and it was like she wasn't able to or something like that. This more like childlike, was like a gibberish or something like that.
No, it was the way that she would talk. It wasn't that conscious communication anymore, but she would literally talk more in symbols. And
Okay. I feel like whenever you said that, it just made me think of my own experience, which was so, so traumatizing for me, that my mom, the first time after she lost her hair, I flew in to go and see her, and I surprised her, and I came in the room and she was trying to talk to me and she like couldn't, and it came out as all this gibberish, and it was just, it was one of the most painful moments in my life. And it, fuck. Yeah, I mean, this just goes to show, it's like all of us have our own experiences with all of this. And yeah. I wanted to comment too on this beauty of being closer to death and starting to see those spirits. I channeled a song right before my mom passed away for her birthday. She passed on January 3rd and her birthday is December 8th. And in this song, I was saying, your daddy says he's got you. Yeah, he's standing right beside you. And I had a vision the night before that my grandfather was standing behind, right directly behind her, where she was sitting in her hospital bed. And it's a really, really sweet song. And I gave it to her for her birthday. And she was like, oh, that's so sweet. And then nearing her end, she started seeing more spirits too. She would see Sundays on her bed. She would see this woman that would go out and watch the sunset every night, and there was no one there. She would see army men in her room. And then one night she was like yelling. She woke up my dad and she was like, Daddy, Elmer. And Elmer is my grandfather's brother. And then she asked them, how do I tell them goodbye? And they just, I don't know what they responded back to her, but that was kind of the first indication that my dad had that maybe, yeah, that she wasn't going to make it. But it's just so fascinating to see whenever they are really in that realm of transition that they do really start. It's like the conscious embodiment is more merging with their etheric astral embodiment. And they're seeing so many more spirits.
And it's like the moment I feel like it's also different. And thank you so much for sharing that piece, because your mom went through more like a violent transition in that sense. You know, she went through a lot of medication and a lot of violence that was done to her body in the name of medicine, but it was very violent. Whereas both of my grandmas, when I was sharing about this process being beautiful, both of them had natural deaths, and it wasn't something that was given to them from the outside. So I think that's a big difference in the way that we move through death, for sure. And in that process of the natural death that I've witnessed with both my grandmas and my cats and my bird, it was so fascinating, because right before they crossed over there, it's like what you just said, like that embodiment, that spirit is like more outwardly, and they shine just a little bit brighter. And I could see it in their eyes just a little bit, because there is like this, it's like this soul is almost like already almost leaving their body, and you could feel that on the outside. So I wonder, is that something that you've experienced as well, Emily? Is there, or was it for you also a more violent?
It wasn't necessarily violent. It's that I just couldn't be present for it. I think the hospice nurse told me that Ian was dying. He'd probably die within the next 24 hours. And honestly, I felt relief, because I was so tired of living in limbo, of living my life by doctor's visits and medical scans and what trial are we going to start next? Because that basically, we couldn't plan ahead. It was like, well, you know, is Ian going to be around for Theo's first birthday? We don't know. So it was just living with a cancer diagnosis is navigating the waters of uncertainty 24/7. And you really just have to be mindful and take it one day at a time. And so when Ian actually passed away, or when the nurse told me that it was the end, because honestly, once you get into hospice, it's like, you know what's happening and you just have to wait for it to play out. Mm. And so I felt relief, because I had already grieved the life that we had before. You know, as soon as I became Ian's caretaker, you know, our relationship had already changed so much. And when he actually passed, no one was in the room for him. And I believe that he wouldn't have had it any other way. I think Ian had a lot of pride, and he was like, I'm out, I'm going to go surfing. Dawn Patrol is right before the sunrise. We were in Hawaii. And I think he was just like, bye guys, like, don't wait up for me. And so I didn't get to have that experience necessarily. And I am actually working with my therapist on finding ways to really say goodbye. 'Cause I said goodbye, but I didn't really say goodbye, because I wasn't really present to what was actually happening in front of my eyes. It couldn't be.
And I think that's such a big piece that you're speaking on there is that moment of relief.
Yeah. And that for a lot of caretakers.
Yeah. And like normalizing it and like being okay with it, because I feel like there's also some sort of shame attached to it. Like, am I allowed to feel that way?
Totally. I never would have thought in a million years that I would be on TikTok talking about my husband's death, but I have a large following over there. And when I shared that I felt relief, I had so many people reach out to me, caretakers, saying, oh my gosh, thank you so much for saying that, because I felt that way too. And it's hard. It's you're, like I said, you're grieving the loss long before they're actually, your person has actually passed. And you can feel really trapped and suffocated by it all. And at the same time, you wouldn't want it to be any other way because you love your person so much.
Emily, I feel like we could sit here talking with you all day about this.
Probably.
Wow. Thank you so much for just really opening up this plane, this sensitive topic, this dimension, the importance of it. It's like, again, we're just so grateful that you've stepped into this soul mission. And as painful as it's been, I love that you've persevered. I love that you're resilient, and also the resilience feeds the vulnerability and vice versa. Just thank you for your courage.
Thank you so much. Thank you for sharing your hearts with me today too, both of you, and for having me on. It means a lot.
Absolutely. And we would just love for everyone and anyone who is navigating their own waters of grief, what is it that you have coming up? Is there anything that you would really love to share?
Love it. Well, thank you guys.
Oh yeah. I was saying, Do you have any launches coming up?
Oh, do I have any launches? Okay. Sorry. I missed that question. What do I have going on? This is exciting. Next year, at the beginning of 2023, I'll be launching a new membership in attempts to make my coaching programs a little bit more accessible. Mm-hmm. So it'll be called the Move Through Membership, and you'll get coaching with me and my movement coach twice a month for $199 a month. And you can join, you can leave whenever you want, but we will be providing that. And then I'll just be launching all of my programs again this year. All the ones that I ran this year will be back next year, and probably some more, because I like to create and evolve and grow.
Beautiful. I know that you have a hard stop here in a couple minutes. So we have three sacred questions that we ask every single guest that comes on, and these can be just shorter format. It's whatever rises to the surface and wants to be shared.
Okay.
So what does sacred mean to you?
Ooh, I feel sacred just means like it's protected and intimate. It feels like it's something for me.
Beautiful, short and sweet. Love it. So who is a sacred sister to you, and what does it mean to have a sacred sister?
Probably Shosh. Shoshana. I think, again, it's a relationship that's protected and mutually beneficial. It's held in some sort of like a divine light. And yeah, I think my relationship with Shosh is, she's just such an expander for me. Mm. Yeah.
Mm. How do you find yourself turning something normal or mundane into something magical or sacred?
Ooh, I love that question, because I feel like Ian was really good at doing that. Mm. He would take the mundane and turn it into something magical. And I think it's through what we talked about today. Finding the gratitude in that all of this isn't forever and it goes away, and how can we make the most of it? Because tomorrow isn't guaranteed.
Mm. So beautiful. You're such a powerhouse. Thank you so much for coming on the Sacred Sister podcast.
Thank you for having me. Loved it. Loved our time. Let's grab a picture. I want to grab a picture so we can post it.
Sounds good. I'm like Every time I get offline too, I'm like, fuck, I didn't grab a picture again. I know.
I'll tag you guys. We'll do a little boomerang. Mm. Let me turn it around.
Beautiful.
Okay. Ready, guys? Just wave. Anyway, do one more because you guys weren't waving. Okay. One more. Okay. Ready? Wave. Okay, I'll tag you guys.
Thank you, babe. And thank you to each and every one of the sacred beings who are here with us at the end of the show. We so appreciate your listenership and we're excited to see you in the next episode. Yay. Namaste.
Hey, thank you. I'm sending you so much healing too.
Oh, thank you. Yes. Physical healing and then into the emotional healing.
Yes.
All level.
Okay.
That was beautiful, you guys. I know. Sorry, I have to bounce, but thank you for the really heartfelt conversation. And I can't wait for the episode to come out. Let me know so I can share it.
Beautiful. Sounds good. Thank you, babe. And we'll just wait for those photos.
Yes, I will. I'll send them right away.
Okay. Okay. Thank you, babe.
Bye.
Bye. Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for listening to this episode, beloved. If you found the ideas, concept, message and mission to be in alignment with what you want to see and hear rippling throughout the collective, for heaven's sake, we invite you to be a part of that ripple creation and share it with your sacred sisters, brothers, and beings alike. You have no idea the impact a simple share can make in someone's day, in their life, in their growth.
Another way to share your support is by leaving us a rating or review on the app you're tuning into this from. If your Instagram feed is in need of more uplifting, conscious, spiritual content, follow us at Sacred Sister Podcast. So, with that being said, we hope you have a wonderful rest of your day and we'll see you in the next episode. Namaste, beloved.
Bye.